This is Yaron Brook, guest speaking on Dr. Leonard Peikoff's podcast. I'm here to apply Ayn Rand's philosophy of objectivism to your real-life questions. Your real-life questions specifically to current events, including politics, economics, and foreign policy. My answers are posted every other week on Mondays. Leonard will continue to answer questions, but now only on alternate Mondays. You can listen to full episodes on iTunes or listen to single questions or full episodes at www.peikoff.com. If you have a question to ask me, simply go to peikoff.com/questions. So I got a number of questions about the Arizona law that the governor vetoed that would have allowed business owners to discriminate against homosexuals. What do I think of this? I'm going to get into trouble, huh? I believe you have a right to discriminate. I mean, it's ridiculous that we have to have a law that says you have a right to discriminate against homosexuals. The law should say it's your property. You have the right to discriminate against anybody, including homosexuals, including Jews, including blacks, including Muslims, including whites, including whoever. That's what private property means. It means it's yours to do as you see fit. A restaurant, a store, is not public property. Government has no role in telling me who can and cannot shop in my store. If I'm a weddings photographer, I mean, I think it's irrational. I think it's stupid. I think it's bigoted. I think it's racist to, let's say, not photograph mixed marriages. But I have a right to be bigoted and irrational and so on. And the same with, you know, homosexual marriages. So you have a right to discriminate. Government has no right to stop you from discriminating. So in that sense, I'm against that provision in the 1964 Civil Rights Bill that prohibited private discrimination. I think that's discriminatory in and of itself. It discriminates against bigots. And I don't think that's right. It also forces us to impose affirmative action-like laws which discriminate against whites, for example, or against Asians in some schools in California, so on. So I think all discrimination by government should be banned. Government should not be allowed to discriminate at all. That's what equality before the law, equality of rights, equality of freedom really means. Government has no right to discriminate. But we as individuals, the meaning of private property, the meaning of the right to liberty means that we can hold ideas that are wrong and irrational and immoral, as I think racist ideas are. We have a right to hold those ideas. Or in other words, the government doesn't have a right to impose its views on us. So now this is the problem with the law in Arizona. It's clearly an anti-gay law. So I don't know what my position on the law in Arizona is. If the law had said you can discriminate against everybody as a private business owner, then I'd be 100% for it. But you can only discriminate against homosexuals, but you can't discriminate against other things. That's ridiculous. Why are they singled out? So it's a problem of the kind of world we live in where you can't even talk about these issues because people yell at you that you're a racist. But government needs to get out of our lives. And freedom means the freedom to have your own views. The freedom means the freedom to be controversial, freedom to do things that other people don't like. And that includes the freedom to discriminate, even if that discrimination is irrational, as many of these forms of discrimination are, or any form of racism, or any form of bigotry is. Right, so here's a question that I've answered. I refer you to this book, which I've referred you to in many other podcasts, Winning the Unwinnable War, edited by Longino. You can get it anyway, but this is a question that I answer there. What do you think was the real motivation for the U.S. to invade Iraq? Was there any rational, selfish reason? So what was the U.S. motivation to invade Iraq? I think the motivation was what they said it was. I believe them, and I've studied this. The other book that you could read is Neoconservatism and Obituary, which I was the co-author on with Brad Thompson, which also deals with this. The motivation to invade Iraq was a belief by some in the Bush administration, by many intellectuals on the right, the neoconservatives, that it was America's job and responsibility to bring democracy to the world. And if you did that, then it would also serve America's interests because a free Middle East, a democratic Middle East, if you will, would view America as an ally, and therefore the whole Middle East would change. And I think that's really what the motivation. I don't think it's for oil. If the motivation was oil, for example, then U.S. troops would surround the oil fields and let everything else go to hell. But they didn't. They actually let the oil fields go to hell, and they surrounded places that have no significance for America. I don't know what any other reasons would have been. Bush family feud. I'm sure that Saddam Hussein, the Bushes, hated him for a variety of reasons, but I don't think that's it. I think, again, at the end of the day, it was about a vision that Bush had, a vision that the neoconservatives had about bringing freedom to the Middle East. It's a nutty vision, it's a crazy vision, and it's not America's job. Now, was there any rational, selfish reason? No, but there could have been. So you could have said the Middle East is a place inhabited by Muslim radicals, by jihadists who are committed to the destruction of the United States. Their base is in Iran and in Saudi Arabia. In order to have military leverage on the Iranians and the Saudis, we need a position in Iraq. Since Iraq is a dictatorship ruled by a brutal, horrific dictator, we don't recognize its sovereignty. I don't believe we should recognize the sovereignty of any dictatorship. Sovereignty comes from the individual. If you annihilate the rights of individuals, you don't have any sovereignty. And therefore, we will invade Iraq in order to position ourselves better to take care of Iran and Saudi Arabia as real threats to the United States. That would have been a rational, self-interested reason to invade Iraq. That wasn't the reason. It had nothing to do with selfishness. It had nothing to do with rationality. It had to do with a fantasy, a neoconservative fantasy that they could have this impact on Iraq. As soon as I realized what was going on in Iraq, that we weren't really fighting the war, that we were letting our kids just die for no reason, that we weren't going to leverage this into something more substantial in terms of actually going after our enemies, that the real motivation here was to bring about this neoconservative fantasy, I was against the Iraq war, and I was an advocate for bringing the troops home. So I think it was a horrific waste of American lives. Completely different topic. What is the government's role in wildlife management, if any? Is the government justified in requiring you to purchase a license to hunt fish, so on? I mean, it has no role in wildlife management, but the government shouldn't own any property. So this whole issue shouldn't be relevant. Property should all be private. The animals on your private land should basically be yours. You as an individual who own the property should be allowed to issue hunting licenses. I can't go onto your land and hunt zebras, but if you want to have zebras on your land that I can hunt, or lions or whatever, tigers or whatever, then it's your responsibility. Now, given that the government owns this vast quantity of land, I mean, 75% of all the land west of the Mississippi is owned by some government entity, then I guess it's reasonable that they have, you know, licenses to hunt fish and so on, and they do some things in order, like wearing orange so you don't shoot each other. But it's not a big issue. The big issue is the private ownership of land. If you privatize the land, all these questions go away. That reminded me, there was a question about something I'd said in the past, where I'd said the only property the government should own was the, like, police stations and military bases. And this question says, well, why should they own that? Couldn't private citizens own that and the government just lease it from them? Yeah, I mean, I think that's the right answer. So, yes, I think all land should be owned by private citizens. And basically, the government should be in a position to lease the land they need in order to use that land to protect us. They should lease it from us. And that would solve the private ownership problem. So the government should own no land, no actual property. It should have leases in order to use whatever facilities are necessary for it to actually have these facilities. Here's a question about, I gave a talk. In the talk, I said something like, the fact that we have this enormous tax burden, the fact that, you know, 50% of our money is taken from us in some sense is worse than a draft, right? Because a draft, you put away a few years of your life, but then after that, you can do what you want, kind of. But taxes, basically 50% of your life, you're working for the government, which means 50% of the time where you're being productive is for somebody else. You're forced to sacrifice. You're basically somebody's slave for 50% of the time. Now, yeah, I mean, saying it's worse is a rhetorical flair. I mean, I'm not saying it's worse. I'm saying it's all evil. It's evil. And the context is this. When there's a draft in America, at least, people go out into the street and demonstrate. They get really pissed off. They get angry. But when we impose 50% taxes on them, everybody just shrugs and says, fine, who cares? And I think that's horrific. And this is particularly true of young people today. 50% is nothing, right? They're just starting out in life, and we've already burdened them with hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of debt. They're going to have to pay huge quantities of taxes in the future to pay for the Medicare and to pay for the Social Security and to pay for Obamacare and to pay for all these schemes that the government has going. And they don't seem upset about this. So what I'm advocating is, just like they went into the streets to avoid a draft in the 1960s, they should be going out into the streets today to basically shrug off all the taxes and all the debt that is being imposed on them by their parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents, by the so-called greatest generation and all the other generations that followed. These are awful generations, generations that are basically burdened, their great-grandchildren, their grandchildren, with a burden that they can never live with. They're basically, these are generations that have bankrupted this country. And it's time for young people to stand up and to object, to go out into the streets and to demonstrate against. Nothing here has diminished the evil that is the draft. And as I've said, and I know there's some libertarian out there, you know, they claim that I'm for a draft in Israel and not for a draft in the United States. I am against the draft everywhere. I've said this a dozen times, but some people don't want to listen. They don't pay attention because all they want is to make me look bad to their little cult. I'm against all drafts. I'm against the draft in Israel. I'm against the draft in the United States. And I think they're evil. And so nothing I said should be taken as to diminish that at all. Here's a short one. Should Sikhs be allowed to wear turbans in the U.S. Army? Probably not. I mean, there's certain gear you have to wear. A turban strikes me as interfering with that. When you go into the army, because it's a volunteer army, you're committed to following certain rules, to wearing certain clothing, to wearing a uniform, to acting in certain ways that are inconsistent with certain religions. If you have to wear a turban, don't go into the army. So what do you make of the law in California which states that if someone breaks into your home and is unarmed, it is illegal to shoot him? Is this a rational law? No, of course it's not a rational law. How do you know he's unarmed? Is a weapon the only way in which somebody could kill you? Knives, strangulation, beating you to death, a thousand. Somebody breaks into your house. You have a right to defend yourself, and you have a right and obligation to yourself in your own life. Now, first thing you should do is call the police. But if you believe this person is a threat to you and the police are not going to get there in time, absolutely shoot the bastard, and the law should absolutely protect you as long as you can show that this person actually broke into your house, wasn't an invited guest, wasn't a family member or something, you know, and that there was reason for you to fear for your life. You should shoot them. You know, this is the point I would make to all criminals. Once you violate somebody's rights, you are kind of fair game. Once you violate rights, you lose all rights. Now, I don't believe in vigilantism. We have a justice system that meets out justice appropriate to the crime. And I think that's right for a variety of legal reasons. But you as an individual, if your rights are being violated right now and you're being threatened right now, you need to take the measures necessary to protect yourself. And the law needs to recognize your right to self-defense. Again, given the context of an emergency where you can't call the police to help you out.
If you want to know more about Ayn Rand's philosophy, I invite you to ask me a question. I can't answer them all, but I do read them all. Just write to leonard@peekoff.com. And if you haven't already done so, start by reading Ayn Rand's two most important novels, The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. And I might add that it wouldn't hurt you to read my latest book, The Dim Hypothesis.